Linda said, you're going to back to the church again? I said, yeah, my car's on permanent GPS. I'd only know Hawkins to church, Hawkins to church, Hawkins to First Watch Church. Yeah, that's it, nothing else. Oh, and Kroger's twice. Yeah, I got to go to Kroger's. But I do, and especially the prayer this time. Normally, in these environments, and I was telling them last night that if anything's increased over the last 30 years of my life, probably 35 years, has been this very thing. If the prophetic sight's done anything for me, it's caused me to have a greater prayer life, a scheduled prayer life. If he wants to interrupt it, he can, but I live very scheduled in regards to that. So today's a certain day, tomorrow's a certain day. You know, the church here gets it, is every Tuesday. He is every Tuesday, Friday, as well as the leaders, and Sundays as well, because we're close. So it's just that kind of thing where I used to pray by inspiration, and I realized that I wasn't very inspired, really, you know. So it really works out that way, and I think it's important. So I love this. And there's so many different moments of key prayer in our Bible. Normally, especially where we are today, as I said to the men, that we're in this era change, not leadership change, not systems change, not dynamic change, really a change of era, one or another. The two men that would stand out normally for me now, of course, and I love their prayers, is Daniel in Daniel chapter 9, the ending of a 7-year period, which his prayer is so incredible. And we're going to notice this morning is the prayer is always in what God is intending to do and the hope of what God is intending to do, not so much what's happening in the earth or with the enemy. And so Daniel, at the end of 70 years, he's in his at least 80, has to go at least probably 12, 13 years old, 83, 84. With all the incredible understanding he has by vision, he does not know it's a 7-year period. I thought that was pretty neat. So when he reads Jeremiah's writings, his prayer is fantastic, and the basis of his prayer is that his face would shine upon his sanctuary again because the Lord simply has left, the glory of God has moved. The other one, of course, is Nehemiah, which you have them at bookends because one is the ending of a time period looking for restoration. The other one is in the midst of restoration. Nehemiah chapter 1 is this fabulous prayer. And both of these men repent for their own people and their own sins. They identify with their world. Yet there's not a purer man, I don't think, than Joseph and Daniel, I was thinking, in the Old Testament. Certainly Nehemiah's the way. But it's not that with us this morning, though, that's not the way I feel like we're to go. And these two I loved. One's my absolute favorite, and we'll go to him in a minute. But it's going to be really Abraham. And there's a couple reasons for that, I think, with this group. And I understand it, again, by obviously the scriptural study, how the Lord sets things up. But Abraham holds a very important place in a theological way for us because he is the first, the patriarch, even for the ladies here, the matriarch. And the Lord holds that oldest believing or one he's called extremely valuable to the overall future of the people of God. And so what Abraham does and what the Lord does with Abraham, I think, is remarkable. And I think this morning, my dad is still alive, so my dad really represents more the Abrahamic covenant for my family. And you do realize, though, and I know we don't talk about this, so we were in Abraham's loins. Everybody was in Abraham's loins. So everything that begins with Abraham comes. That's why he's so often used in the New Testament, refers back to the father of us all. And so here Abraham is in this moment, and the Lord's about to do something to Sodom, as you know, the story. And he says, well, wait a minute, we will not do anything until we first speak to Abraham. He's called a prophet, but the reality is, though, is the Lord is going to ask Abraham what he's about to do, what Abraham really thinks, and what Abraham wants. And I think that you become the most important. I'm not quite there yet. I'm there in different ways, but my own lineage And in my family, though, my dad really still is the patriarch, and my mom alive, still at 89. But I understand the principle. So I'll say to my dad, "Dad, your prayer really," he looks at me and goes, "Son, I'm proud of you." I said, "Dad, great, fine, we're good with that. But your prayer and what you believe is so critical to our personal family and the history of our believing family and our lost family." So your Abraham realizes, you know the story, that he's going to, Sodom's wickedness is so great, it literally comes up to the Lord. The only other time that's happened is really with during Noah's day. It was the whole earth was filled with violence. And the Lord has to make a difference. It always intrigued me, Abraham's response. It wasn't do something about the evil in Sodom. It was, he understands the righteous make the difference in every city. And so his prayer isn't, please stop the wickedness in Sodom. His prayer is, if there's 50 righteous, will you not destroy Sodom? Then, you know, he goes all the way down to 10. Apparently, there wasn't even 10 righteous. But the idea, I realized, because I'm so drawn naturally to the negative and the pushback in the, of the darkness, I realize that darkness only has power when there's no light. The city only was wicked because of the lack of righteousness there. And now we're living in a very, in a darkening world. I would say from the time that I got born again to now, it's gotten darker. Would you not say that? Certainly the last 20 years, it's gotten darker. And so my tendency is to be drawn to that. And sometimes there's a reality. Sometimes I got to deal with the demonic, but even Daniel doesn't even know that there's a prince and there's all this is going on. He's just waiting for God. And sometimes we're drawn away from the heavenly perspective and get caught up in the second realm or this realm. And I love the way Abraham does this, though. His cry really is that way. It's to, will you, and I think our hope right now is that righteousness prevail and the people of God begin to stand up and walk, not so much the darkness. You know, the person I'm going to go to next, of course, is Jesus. He's the same way, though. It wasn't about the answer to the darkness in Matthew chapter 4 is that a great light came. Not that the darkness would get out. The answer to prevailing darkness is prevailing light. That's the answer. So the light and what the Lord's declaring out of the heavens is the key thing. And so I think in this generation, your generation, the older generation, the patriarchal generation now, and I'm getting closer to that, really your prayer becomes incredibly necessary and vital to what God is wanting to do and intending to do. And I think with Abraham, he wants to line himself up with your gen, with this. I don't mean to say your generation because I'm a lot closer to it than I probably believe I am. But it is, though, I'm saying it because of my dad, but the older generation. I was blaming the older generation of leaders for the condition we have today. I'm probably right, because we have in the church world what they wanted. But the Lord dealt with me. That's none of your business. I'm doing with you, you hold on to that. So when I start stepping up and my dad's gone, there's a whole new believing system. Not because I'm better or something different. It's just what the Lord's doing within me. And certainly it's those things. Daniel knew that the glory of God needed to return. Nehemiah knew the city has to be built. They're synonymous. Zion and the glory of God are synonymous in the New Testament. So it's beautiful. So Abraham has his prayer. I mean, it's phenomenal. And it just simply is, you know, and I love him with it. He's basically saying, Lord, don't be mad at me. But if there are 40, oh, Lord, please, if there's 30. And he goes down to 10, of course, and there isn't. But again, I think it's a principle that Abraham has a sense that it isn't an issue about the wickedness. The issue is about the righteous. And so I've turned my prayer life much more to what he's desiring, what he's declaring, where I was raised because of the charismatic thing, really in the demonic thing, casting down death. You know, here's my deal with the devil, just so you'll know. Because, you know, I don't hear much. I got to teach the 10th chapter the 12th chapter of the Revelation. I've got to teach demonic. That's fine. But I'm either going to resist him, submit myself to God, resist him, stand, or cast him out. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I have no business with him. I'm not interested in the second realm. I don't care what's going on there. People ask me when I go into cities often, Dr. J, what's your sense of the spirits that are moving here? I said, you know, and I try to be nice. I said, really? I don't even give it a thought. I don't pay attention to it. What do you mean? Oh, no. what the third heaven's declaring and what he's declaring, that's what I got my heart and my mind set. This matters nothing. That's what matters. So Abraham lends himself to that. Of course, the other one that I just, and I want to read it, but we know it, is, are you okay with that, folks? I think it becomes so important. And he asked, when we talked about it this morning, I just went back and I had to do some other things. I was just thinking. And again, Abraham would not have been my thought. Daniel and Nehemiah would have been way more my, would have been mine. And this one, of course, is my favorite, but I really want to read this text. Of course, my most important for me anyways becomes the 17th chapter of John. Jesus' final prayer is one that I personally, on a daily basis, for us, I say yes to it, I line up to it, I re-pray it, because he says some things in there that are just, you know, so important. And he's praying something, and if Jesus is praying something, that means it isn't yet, and it doesn't have to be and needs to be. Wouldn't you say that? It's there when he says, I've declared it is, sun setting, sun coming down. But when he's praying something, he's asking his father to do it. And I just, when I saw that, I thought, you know, I want this personally for my life, but I want it for us. And I know this about, if you do any level of study of the glory of God, we have never had it. Never. And I'm not talking about, we love the kavod, we love the Sinai moment, we love this shaking, this awness of God. And I've been in rooms where people say, oh, the glory of God is here, I can't see anything. Well, that's totally false. That's fabrication. You better open up your eyes or you got cataracts. Something's wrong with you. The doxa of the New Testament is the manifestation and revelation of Jesus Christ in such simplicity, yet awness. It feels like he's sitting, he's as close as this, and it's almost like I can feel him this tangible. We've never lived without that. When they gather in, where's Richmond is the capital of Virginia? Mm-hmm. When they gather in Richmond, you can't stop and say he doesn't exist. You can't help and say he's here, even if you don't believe it, he's here. That kind of level, we've never had that. We've been satisfied with wind, rain. We've been satisfied with refreshings and kind of thought, wow, what a great moment. He never wanted moments. He wanted dwelling. He really has. And so let's look at this, if you don't mind. This will be our final prayer. And I would love if you would take not only the obviously Abraham's, Daniel's, and Nehemiah's, if you already haven't done that, and make them a part of your intercessory life. Because I love these prayers more than my own that I have, and I have them first, but this, praying this Bible is beautiful. I want to read John 17. He says a lot there, but especially the prayer portions of it, and just pause a little bit. 17. Yeah. Sorry about that. I've really gotten a lot of complaints. I talk too fast. Linda tells me all the time. Yeah, I'm respectful for time. Nothing his fault. We're people, and I have a big head. Okay. I love verse 15. Let's just start there because he's talking a lot. I pray for them. I've given them. I've glorified. But he gets a little more personal here. Verse 15, I pray not that thou shouldest take them out of the world, but that thou should keep them from evil. That's about his length of dealing with any evil. They are not of this world as I am not of this world. Sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is truth. As thou hast sent me into the world, even so I have also sent them. And for their sakes I sanctify myself. He's going on. Verse 20. Neither pray I for these alone, but for them also which shall believe on me through their word. Talking about today, yes. That they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee. That they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. That's going to be the convincing thing. Verse 22. And the glory which thou gavest me, I have given them. Now that's unreal because that would be the glory from the pre-Christ, pre his incarnation, all the way through his life. that splendor, the beauty, the majesty that he had, he's given to us. That's what I'm looking for. That they may be one, even as we are one. That's really the key for our oneness. It isn't doctrinally same, do everything the same. It isn't. Glory is the only thing that brings oneness. We need it. 23, I in them, thou in me, that they may be perfect in one, that the world may know thou hast sent me and hast loved me as thou hast loved them. Now this 24 is my, I live here. Father, I will, this is my prayer for you, by the way, and for all of the guys who associate with me who are set to spread the gospel. Father, I will, but it's also for us, the church, I will that they also, whom thou hast given me, which is us, be with me where I am. That's present tense. I mean, it's incredible that he's even saying that. And that they may behold my glory, which thou hast given me. Now, a question, ladies and gentlemen, where is he? Where is he seated? How are we going to see him? See, this is the funny thing. I always read this and I thought, I'm going to like this see him? No. There is a dimension of that heavenlies that we are supposed to be experiencing. The glory, the knowledge of the glory of God is in the face of Jesus Christ. How am I going to not see it if I'm not there? Are you following me a little bit here? I mean, his prayers, when I first read that, I just went blank. I just skipped over. What are you even talking about? She's saying, where I am, where is he? I know he's inside of us, so where is he? That thou, they may behold my glory, which thou hast given me, for thou lovest me before the foundation of the world. We could just stop there. So there's this real prayer of Jesus, and I don't think this is pre-Gethsemane. This is a final word to 12 almost idiots that he's living this thing to. And he's not only praying for them, but he's praying for us as well. This generation, right now, this prayer is. It's my prayer for us. It's my prayer for me. It's my prayer. I say to him, yes, I'm agreeing with this. We've got to have the splendor, beauty, the majesty, the preeminence, the excellence that you had then. And we absolutely, I want to out of passion. We need to behold the glory that you have now and be with you where you are. I don't think that's, I was always raised, that will be when I die. So all my songs were going to go, was in the sweet by and by, I'll see his face. Not me. Not interested in that. What good is that going to do my family, our neighbors, the world, if I'm dead seeing him? But I'll tell you, when I see him now, if Moses could look at the puny part of his backside and have an illumination that was so incredible that it had to be veiled off, what would happen to us if we behold his face? I don't think we'll become so much light they can't, but there'll be something will change in us that's just unprecedented. It's supposed to be. His appearing alone changes us. 1 John chapter 1, 3, 1, 2, 3. When I see him as he is, I'm changed in the image. I'm to be looking into the glory of God like a mirror, being changed from glory to glory. I'm supposed to. That's who we're supposed to be. Anything less than that is we're missing something. And I wish it would be by education. I wish I could get schooled into a place. But I'll tell you, our world is a product of what education does without any splendor, majesty, or glory. It twists your mind. It makes you nuts. It's just, you can't have it. Big head with no heart is trouble, you know, or no spirit. So, I think this is bigger. I think my prayers are important. I think yours are far more valuable. And I think every seed that's about to go into the ground, as he taught in the 12th chapter of John, I said to my dad, I said, Dad, I know this. What you carry into the ground, what you're believing, will multiply back to us incredibly. That's whether right. You see it or not, yeah, that's exactly the beautiful right. thing about our God. Yeah. And that's why your belief, I'm disappointed with all my young guys, just so you'll know, the young pastors, that's the how old are you?
51.
Wow, I was going to say 50 down. Good thing I said 50 down. You know, Rehoboam made a real bad decision when he went to Judah and he wouldn't let any, Jeroboam, I'm sorry, wouldn't listen to the older men, big mistake. I want them to leave, but when I see no gray hairs in the house, it bothers me. And I'll say to them, you know, you don't realize what that means. That there's a strength. It's supposed to be that way. When we go out, the beauty of us going out is nobody's looking forward to that. I'm certainly not. But the beauty of that is what it reaches back to our not only our family but the generations coming up. It's huge, and that's why he deals with Abraham like that. He doesn't do the same thing with Isaac or Jacob, but Abraham, because that particular matriarch is very, very, very key in all that.
It's good.
Amen. Are you guys together? Or are you just... Yeah, you just...
We were when we got here.
That's a good answer.
All I need is... See, a good thing John Hine's not here because I wouldn't be able to get past four of them.
Yeah, that's right.
Because that's the same answer. Well, she brought me here. I don't know if she's going to take me back home again. Right? I mean, we would get that for sure. See, you don't get that. You can't say that unless you have gray hair. That's just not gonna. It can't be said, right? You just. No one's saying that does it. No, that's great. Yeah, the enemy has really. You know, and this is funny. I don't talk much enemy stuff. I don't. Really has tried to work against your house, work against the covenant of God in regards to his health. The strength, physical strength, especially the enemy's really worked against that portion of the covenant against your house. He's attempted to oppose the healing power and the life of God in your home. He's tried to throw out. He's tried to just come in there and ruin it. And so the Lord is when he does that, it's a big mistake, because what the Lord does is he pushes back. The gates of hell shall not prevail. That's the idea. Right. And so the Lord is really freshly establishing his covenant within your house, but especially of health, wellness. My brother, through your blood, the lymph nodes, through your spinal, especially through the fluids in your spine, the Lord is just touching to bring fresh strength, renewed life, renewed freshness into your kidneys, liver as well. He's just strengthening it. The enemy is just trying to just bring disease to the house. That would be a good way to say it. But the Lord just stayed and by his hand. That's all it needed. And so in this process of recovery, though, you're going to find a fresh new strength, a fresh revived strength, a renewed strength. And really all in this, there's, I think even the ones who aren't here, though, the Lord is really refreshing this. The ones who have attended here have done this and set this time aside. The Lord is really refreshing the spirits of everyone. I'll say a little bit most likely to everybody, but he really is. He's really refreshing the spirit. And I think the word to her was on Sunday would be you could grab hold of that if you haven't heard or she hasn't told you, and just add that to the believing aspect of what the Lord's intending to do. He really has moved into your lives in an unusual way. We never know how much he honors the sacrifice. We just don't. We just know we're supposed to sacrifice. And when we choose not to sacrifice, we don't realize it causes an ending to an honoring that the Lord wants to do. So sacrifice, a sacrificial life, the Romans 12 thing, is something we should always live for. We should be, and you know this. You know, the younger generation is still learning it. And so you're just going to see this thing renewed, and you know, even the covenant with your children, to your children and their seed, there's just going to be a newness of spirit that's going to come to your household and to your family. Even the ones who come to your house are going to have a sense of, did you paint? You know, what's something's changed? And did you put new lights in? Are these, is the wattage up? No, it's going to be none of that. It's just the Lord just is there, and he brings this kind of light. He just does. It's not easily discerned by people, but when I walk into folks' houses, there's just a dimension of God that's either there or it's not there. That's it. And it's a beautiful thing. It doesn't mean anything plus or minus, but it's always beautiful to see. And it has an effect on the people who come. And he really wants it to cause your house to be a house of refuge, a house of hope, house of healing. And this is why he's really beginning it with the two of you. My sister here in front of me, you really come from, it's like the gospel's in your blood. It's really beautiful. It's come down from generations to your life, to you I'm talking. It has in an amazing way in music, in prayer, and in the declared gospel. You have all these lines that have been in within your family. And but there's been such a burden upon your heart for the condition of your family and what it's become. It's always been a house of salvation, a house of hope, your people, your family, the largeness of your family. But there's been a disintegration of the city, if you will. It hasn't been ruined like Jerusalem, but it wasn't as vibrant as you remember it. And your heart's been burdened to see the Lord once again visit your house, visit your people, yeah, visit your children, your grandchildren, great-grandchildren, nieces and nephews, your siblings, their children, and you really carry that burden. You're really, the Lord, from the time you were a young girl, were always going to be the spearhead for your family to the kingdom of God. You'd always be out front, and that's caused some suffering, some pain. It's caused some discomfort because not everybody really accepted that, really enjoyed that, really felt that. They just kind of wanted to go their own way, but you carried it. And you're really beautiful, too, because you didn't let the burden. Some people, burden, their face carries the burden. I don't even want to be around, and they're all, you know, that kind of look. I wish they'd read their Bible and say, listen, wash your face. I don't know, chew some gum, eat some sugar. You know, I don't, do something, then go outside. I don't want to see that face. You know, it's just that way. And but you haven't been that way. And so you're going to see, you have to know, though, that the Lord's already establishing the day of restoration for your house, for your people and your family. He's already declaring it, much like the day of Ezra would come, much like the day of Nehemiah would come, much like the day of the visitation of the Lord in the incarnation of Jesus Christ. He sets these times. He sets these things in motion. Nobody stops them. Even if the enemy knew once Nehemiah got there, the enemy knew they were angry with it. Couldn't do a thing. Didn't matter. Doesn't matter what the enemy thinks or feels. The response is going to be anger, of course. So what? Big deal. I don't expect anything else. But they're powerless against what God intends to do. Powerless. And so don't worry about if it appears darkness rises or there's you hear accusations against your people. Don't give way to them. Don't even you can laugh if you want, but just don't even look. Nehemiah never answers them. He just doesn't even listen. And certainly Jesus doesn't give into that ever at one bit. So just continue the same hope, the same belief. I love this about you, and it's with a lot of the people here, is you're still allowing the Lord to work your vessel. I appreciate that. I encourage my dad and my mom. You know, my father kind of got settled a little bit, and the leaves began to settle. And he goes, you know, I'm just discontent where I am, Jay. And I said, Dad, maybe it's time to, you know, even though I know you're tired and you're feeling the age, but maybe it's time to re-grip the Lord again. Maybe it's time to kick the Bible out, kick some books out. Maybe spend an hour, just flip on some. He always loved Phil Driscoll, so I got him a CD of Phil. How can you not, you know? And I gave him Andre Crouchman, which I grew up with again, you know, which I love, you know. And I love that what happens is the Lord's laid his hands back into his vessel, and he's shaping it once again for the kingdom of God. And my sister, you've always been willing to do that. And I just want you to know that the Lord's been very pleased with it. My brother and sister, you know, what can I say about you? I mean, just gold vessels set in the house from day one, which is extremely rare. You always have been. And you've been handled by a lot of people, mishandled at times, and it never tarnished the gold, which I think is pretty amazing. That really is. And, you know, I'm very much into the metals of the tabernacle, the colors, and they're all extremely valuable, extremely meaningful to me. But it really has. And what the Lord has done, though, even though you sense, well, we're just kind of on the team, just to remain on the team, and any time that we don't need to be on the team, we'll be off the team. We don't care. We're the same on the team, off the team, with the team, not with the team. Never mattered. We're just still who we were, which I so love that about you. God, you know, reproduce you, please. And most people I know, that would be very nice. I really would be good. But the Lord really is, and you know, I don't mean to be the same word, but I'm dealing with the same kind of same people group here very much, and the Lord's heart is very much the same, evenly here. The Lord is strongly establishing his covenant with you, and so the Abraham becomes extremely important because he'll visit Abraham three clear times to confirm his covenant. And the amazing thing is that every time he comes, he enlarges it, but it gets more impossible. And I love this is really part of his way. He enlarges the covenant, but the years have gone on, so now it's more impossible. It was not really easy when he was 75. Now at 85, it's not really good. And at 100, it's really gotten bad. But he enlarges it. And he's doing that with you. There's this not return so much to the Lord, but this fresh moving of the Lord within your lives, within your home, to establish his covenant with you and your seed. The Lord will, for me right now, if I could just, I mean, I want to hammer this, shout it, beat the drum over this word I'm going to say to you, but I want you to know that's the strength I feel with it, is that the Lord is absolutely establishing his covenant with you, your seed, and your seed seed in a way you have not ever seen before. And the amazing thing is, though, it's gotten to be more impossible, more difficult. It seems like it's extremely more difficult to establish it. That's why I started with this thing with Abraham, because Abraham wanted to look and say, "Are you kidding me? And I don't understand sometimes. We dealt with it the other night. This delay of God. He just delays with the staff yesterday. It's what he does, but it's always for purpose. Always. Every delay, because he's got an ultimate intention. And when he's continually doing something, there's nothing that really has to change. We're on a roll. When it's a delay, he's coming in a major way, as he did when they were on the water, walking on the water, as he did with the Exodus. The whole reason was the iniquity of the Amorites was not yet full. There's always a reason for it. And so I want you to know, my brother and my sister, whether you see it with your eyes or you do not, he will keep his covenant with your people. Good thing the pail is big. So my sister here, I know we talked yesterday. I know. Oh, by the way, before I say this, this is not a word to you. I just want to tell you this, though. So, because you were feeling something about that girl that was waiting on us, didn't you, with the thing? You remember the girl who was waiting on us? She had the gold thing. Just feeling like something was up with her, right? Okay, yeah. So I just carried that on.
Okay.
So I went up there and said, she just started talking, and she goes, yeah. I said, the Charleston's a great place. Yeah, I went there because it's the suburb of my graduation. Really, where'd you graduate from? Liberty.
Oh,
okay. I says, you did? Yeah, well, what are you thinking about? Well, I'm doing some kind of.
We have breakfast this morning. Yeah. First watch, waitress.
Yeah. So where's? So I said to her. I said. She says. Gonna do some internet study thing. She did. I said. Well, you really should have been you really got a great teaching gift. Teaching would be your thing. Elementary school. She turned red. Mm-hmm. She said, "Well, that was my major.
Wow.
But I really didn't think I could do it.
Wow.
So I shifted over to this." Yeah, I mean, wasn't that? I just thought that I just was going to tell you that because I just thought that definitely there was something more than just a gold thing, just something about her. So for Liberty, so I didn't want to get any, there were people there, so, but I laughed. I was going to call you when I left. Yeah, just to tell you that. But isn't that kind of neat?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she got red, though. She goes, "That was my major." And I said, "Well, you should still consider going back to it."
Good.
Yeah. So, anyways, this is fun. So I know, we talked a little bit, and you talked a little bit about your sons and everything, all that and all that. So I know. So just, okay. But my sister, listen, even yesterday, we just didn't have a chance to talk, though. The Lord is really, this becomes a little bit of a not a difficult thing to handle, but a difficult thing to grasp. And it's this. When the Lord was delivering the children of Israel at the Red Sea, they don't see it and they don't know it. Because when it seems dark and impossible, oftentimes the Lord is doing something that we can't see. So what he did that night was he released an east wind, which is an incredible east wind, and the east wind blew the Red Sea open. He just didn't say open. He sent this wind. So all night long, the wind was blowing and the Lord was bringing a deliverance in the dark without anyone ever seeing it. And I'll tell you this, though, because even when you were we were talking, the Lord will work a work in your family in the dark when it seems darkest, seems impossible, and it just seems like, and I don't really like darkness because I know there's an element of light in darkness. We never have whole darkness. But it's hard for me to capture it. It's hard for me to, and nighttime makes us naturally nervous. Nighttime makes us insecure, uncertain, because we can't see. I mean, who wouldn't be? We walk like this, tentatively like this. And the children of Israel didn't know it. We know it by hindsight, but that's exactly what's happening. And though the night seems long over your children, and it seems that like it you doesn't see any end for the dawn of the darkness, be assured that the Lord is releasing his wind to bring a deliverance out of where they are. Of course, where they were, it was difficult. There was nowhere to go because the chariots were there. they couldn't go here. It felt like they were squeezed. That's exactly how they feel. They're squeezed. sometimes just out of stubbornness, sometimes out of just clear, they just don't, whatever the reason is, though, the Lord is the one who brings the deliverance, and you can be assured that the Lord, in this dark time period, as it appears to be over the family, over the children, the Lord is bringing a wind to release them. So I'm encouraging you this way, though, because I'm probably most tormented at night, and I don't get tormented much. But the enemy, for some reason, part of it's just being a male. I get up, use the bathroom. Yeah. All of a sudden, I got 45 things I'm thinking about. Never good. Women. Yeah, it's just people. It's people. Yeah. You know what? Because we care.
Yeah.
And I'm a light sleeper anyways. And Brett gave me a lot of food last night, so I didn't sleep as well as I should have probably. Spicy food. No, it's whatever the reason is. I don't deal with the reasons, but what I do, though, is I just hit my knees, though, and I remember these things. And I remember that the darkness does not prevail. And in the darkness, the Lord does things that just no one sees. That's all it is. Even the darkness is foolish because they never should have crucified the Lord of glory. So they don't always know what he's doing. Even when they're involved, they're not really that, you know. So just to encourage you, though, that I think the Lord's going to shift your heart and prayer and faith and trust. You have all those things, but I think he's going to shift them so that you'll know that there's a secret in the darkness. You'll know that there's a work of God in the invisible and the unseen world, and the darkness doesn't prevail, nor the scales on their eyes will not prevail either, but the Lord will deliver them and heal them. And I think you're going to see this incredible prevailing prayer, spear-throwing, victorious woman that says, you know what, nothing's taken my seed, and we are going to come out of this thing victorious. Those won't be your words necessarily, but there's just going to be a change, and only the Lord can do that within me to bring that kind of change where my prayer changes from an oh God, travailing prayer to it's already birthed out, hallelujah prayer. Only he can do that, you know. Yeah, I try to convince myself, but it doesn't last very long. Right. You know, it really doesn't happen. Yeah, yes. My sister here, you really, and I hope this you'll be okay with this, though. You know, from your earliest days, I don't know you well, but from your earliest days of Christianity, the Lord really, from your destiny was going to be like Sarah was. And I love everything about Sarah, especially the delayed childbirth moment in her life. So not so much dealing with that with you. But it's what the Lord says to Sarah that says about Sarah, the Hebrew writer will be the one who will declare it, that the Lord is really doing a fresher than you. And I want it for all the ladies and all the men here, because I love this particular word, and for the church as a whole. But the Lord gave Sarah strength to receive the word or the seed. It wasn't because her womb was dead, but it wasn't so that it wasn't about having Isaac, but it was about even receiving the word that the Lord was saying. And I know this, and for my own life, I realize that there's a part of my own spirit, or can I say my own womb, that it, I can't even receive the word because it's too much. It's impossible. And because Sarah's womb was dead, that's why I love this moment with her. Her womb is dead, but it's the Lord who gives her the power to conceive the word, just the word. And so I've spoken over people's lives because the word of the Lord is so large or so impossible, they just cannot receive it. And I'm not saying that your womb's like that, but the Lord is reviving your spirit. That's what I love about this right now. And I want to do it in everybody here. She certainly has it. Part of the word to her was very much this way, just in a different way. To be able to carry the present word, the present truth, and grip it and birth it. Can I say it that way? In this transgender world, this is probably not a good thing, but the thing that makes us the same is I have a womb now, a spirit. And so in reality, I'm a bride now. See, this wouldn't be good in this world. That's probably why the enemy's confusing it, though. But I am. I'm the bride of Christ, but I'm a male. But I've got a spirit now, so I understand travail. Not as good. I ask women all kinds of questions. How does it feel? What's going on here? I want to know. I'm bad. You want to touch it? Absolutely. I got my hand. You know, it's on my daughters-in-law. I'm not on every woman. Come here. Yeah, I can't. You know, you want to touch this? Now the girls really want to touch this. I'm like, oh, boy. Yeah, okay. They show it now in a bathing suit. I don't have to touch it. I can see the baby. I'm kicking right there. Yes, yeah. Anyways, so the Lord wants to, he's in this, he's stirring up a fresh intercession within your life because you're a woman very much about not just your own family, but everybody's family. And Sarah becomes the mother of us all, if you will, like Abraham's father saw. And so the Lord really wants to do this in your life. The reward will come to your people, but the Lord's been very gracious with your family. He really has. The grace of God has been upon your seed in an unusual way. It really has. Not everybody has that. Grace is given. I wish the grace of God was upon my kids more like I see upon other kids, but the Lord doesn't give grace. He gives it liberally, but he gives it as he chooses. And not everybody gets the same. Your family has just had this amazing grace. It really has. And it's just been the Lord's. It's nothing we earn. It's just he's just chosen to do it that way. But this is going to open up new. And part of this, the Lord is upon the girls and the women in your family. He's going to carry it from generation to generation to generation. That's one reason why he's doing it this late in your life. But he waited a long time in Sarah's life as well to do it. And so really, it's just the beginning. So you're going to see your prayer life. Some of the things I mentioned today, I would love you to get acquainted with Daniel's word, especially, and get acquainted with the latter part of Nehemiah's, because Nehemiah's final prayer is that he wants to move forward, and we're in such a desperate time that we need to move forward and not get complacent and hiding and staying here, you know, and all that stuff. So, you know, I don't want to tell you how to pray, but it really would be nice if you would do that. Very much so.
It's good.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, how we doing? Yeah, 1 o'clock. Yeah, we're good. Yeah, we're good. Mm-hmm.